and welcome to another edition of Ice World with me, marine biologist Nadia Frontier, featuring conversations I recorded while working in Antarctica with the British Antarctic Survey. This time, we're speaking to Paul Whitelaw, a PhD student studying Antarctic seabirds, specifically South Polar skuas and Antarctic shags, breeding near Rothera. I was also joined by Aurelia Hychard, past marine biologist and scientific diver. And at the time of recording the interview in 2023, she was the Bonner Laboratory Manager. Aurelia is back in Antarctica for her eighth season, leading the station. You might have also heard Aurelia in some past episodes of the Ice World podcast in the early seasons, conducted by Rob Taylor. I was fortunate enough to join Paul and Aurelia on some field work where they monitor and track the South Polar skua during the breeding season. But first, I'll let Paul introduce himself.
Hi, my name is Paul Whitelaw. I'm a marine biologist and I'm currently at Rothera Base Station as a PhD student, and I'm studying the kind of ecology of the Antarctic seabirds here.
And what type of Antarctic seabirds are you working on?
So my two model species would be the Antarctic shag and the South Polar skua.
Excellent. And why have you chosen these as your two study species?
Well, at Rothera we have breeding populations of those two species, and they're breeding in abundant numbers and they're accessible, and there's actually been long-term monitoring of these two species as well since I think it's the 1980s we've been monitoring them, so make them ideal model species.
And a really cool fact about them is that there's 10% of the world's population of shags here in Rider Bay.
Yeah, there was a recent publication there in 2018 that showed that Rider Bay holds about 10% of the South Polar skua population, global population, and about 3.8% of the Antarctic shag global population as well.
That's really cool. So before we go on to your Antarctic research, can you just explain a little bit about your background?
My background would be, I guess I did an undergraduate degree in zoology. And then after that, did a marine biology degree as well, a master's in marine biology in University College of Cork, so back in Ireland. And over these few years, I've worked in various kind of projects as I've done quite a few different things, working commercial fishing vessels and research vessels as kind of a fisheries observer, but also primarily working with seabirds or other kind of birds as well.
So. What age did you start getting into birds?
At a very early age, I guess. My twin brother and I, we used to go out for walks and I was always very interested in birds.
And when did you get your ringing license? So that enables you to actually put a tag onto a bird so you can give it a unique ID.
I think it was when I was maybe 10, I used to go out to kind of seabird colonies and I used to get involved in kind of the ringing groups. And I think it was actually after college is when I kind of started trying to get my ringing degree. So it's a BTO license, the British Trust of Ornithology. And you kind of get a trainer that teaches you how to kind of handle and ring these birds. And over kind of various years of being trained, you kind of build up your experience, numbers of birds and different species, and you can kind of progress into getting, you know, a sea permit license or a restricted license with seabirds. So that's what I currently have, because I primarily work with seabirds.
And I love that you've had this passion from a very young age, and now here you are moving into the highest point in your education, and this is now your PhD, and yet you are still pursuing this theme of birds. So if we switch hemisphere into the southern hemisphere, let's go to a fine tune. Why did you even want to apply to a project in Antarctica?
Well, seabirds is something that I'm really interested in because they're often used as indicator species for the marine ecosystem. So we can learn a lot about the marine kind of ecosystem health by studying these seabirds. And, well, I remember being an undergraduate student and we had a visiting lecturer, Martin Collins, who works for BASS, so the British Antarctic Survey. And he told me about his work in South Georgia, and I think after that, when I found out about BASS, it was became a little dream of mine to work in this region on seabirds in Antarctica.
So what are the key aims of your PhD?
So I'm really interested in the distribution and the demography of these Antarctic seabirds. So distribution would be where these birds go. So in the summer, they obviously come to Rothera to breed, and then they're rearing chicks. So they do all these foraging trips to feed their chicks. So I really want to know, you know, where are they going to get this food?
So kind of like hotspot areas of prey availability.
Yeah, exactly. And where they're going, why are they going to these areas? So we want to understand what are the kind of key characteristics of these foraging areas that they go to in the summer. And then also, where do they go in the winter? So we also want to look at, we're going to track these birds, the shags and the skuas, and see where they go during the winter. So about 1980, these populations at Rother have been monitored. In terms of breeding numbers, so how many birds are breeding, and then also looking at breeding success. And so
that's excellent. So let's first take the skua. So we'll go with a long-term monitoring program. And luckily, we have another guest in the studio, Aurelia Heichard, who is the Bonner Lab Marine Manager. And she is highly involved in the long-term monitoring of the skua populations. And she's been doing this for the last 5 years. So it's really nice because both of you work together to monitor these skuas. So can you just talk me through first the long-term monitoring, and then we'll get into how you've adapted this monitoring specifically towards your PhD and the additions?
So each year during the summer, during the breeding season, Aurelia will go around to each nest and record what adults are there, whether they have an egg or whether and when that chick hatches, and then we'll monitor the growth rate of these chicks as well. And then towards the end of the season, if they fledge.
Yeah, so as Paul says, it's part of my job to look at the local skua population. So the skua population has been recorded since the late 80s. And in the beginning, we had quite a small standing stock at Rothera Point, around somewhere between 15 to 20 breeding pairs. And they had quite high breeding success in terms of percentage. So most of the chicks that would hatch would actually then fledge later and sort of pass on into the juvenile life stage. And that sort of increased over the years. And then in the past 10 years, there was a lot of variability between seasons. So we had very successful seasons and then seasons where there was almost no eggs and no chicks. So the variability in breeding success has massively increased over the last 10 years. So what I do is every week I go around a certain area here at Rothera. It's the high ground behind the station where the skuas have nests, and the pairs will actually return with the same partner to the same area if it's free of snow and lay eggs in the same kind of nest that they've built before. The nests aren't really what you would imagine as a very pretty nest. They can vary between sort of undulated ground that is clad in moss or lichen that we get here locally, and ranging to very basic nests that are just little depressions in the gravelly ground. And it's about 28 to 30 days of incubation for the eggs, and then they will hatch into chicks that are quite small and they are absolutely covered in down. We look at the number of eggs and how they develop. And then we look at the chicks, measure them twice during their development. And from that, we can then infer whether the population is doing well, whether the adults are feeding them, whether they are sort of oversized, are they undersized? And if they don't have enough food, that could be a good indicator for there not being enough prey species. And that then tells us something about how the whole ecosystem is doing. This season, it's very interesting. This season, we've had the highest number of breeding pairs or territories held, as we say. And we've had the highest number of eggs ever recorded. So we had 30 pairs and up to 50 eggs. However, the percent of the chicks that were actually fledged out of these eggs is probably going to be a lot lower than it previously was. So they used to have somewhere around, 20, 30, 40%. But what we've seen is of one or up to four chicks fledging out of an original 30 eggs. So a lot of Paul's work will really help to understand as he says, the population dynamics of these birds.
And Paul, adding another layer, would you like to explain what how you've added to this long-term monitoring?
Yeah, so that's what my project aims to do. Because South Polar skuas are long-lived species, they live up to 40, 50 years, and they only reach sexual maturation about 7 or 8. And that's why long-term monitoring is key for these species. So my project will aim to look at the kind of key drivers of the population.
And how do you actually catch a skua? What are your techniques?
I have a few different techniques to catch these birds. It's very unique down in Antarctica. These birds aren't used to maybe predators or human disturbances. So we're actually able to walk up to these nests and get quite close to the birds. So if I'm lucky, I'm able to kind of pick them up from the nest. Usually these birds are quite territorial, so they will dive bomb us when we kind of get close to them. If they're flying above me, I can also pick them out of the air as well. So all this is done under the Animal Welfare Ethics Committee and kind of strict protocol. So the welfare of the bird is always the utmost important aspect.
But catching a chick is much easier than that. And that's also something else that you do are monitoring.
We will go once in the year to catch as many chicks as we can. And we can record their wing length and also record the weight of these chicks. And we can apply them to this chick growth rate curve as we can look at kind of hatching dates of these, of that population that we don't normally go to or disturb. So this is all really useful information as well.
And they are absolutely adorable. They're like a little ball of down.
Yeah, so Nadia came out with us there to Anchorage Island to help with this skua chick monitoring. So we caught quite a few chicks. There's about, I don't know, it could be about 300 nests, but we caught quite a few chicks, which was a really fun day.
So we talked about the in-depth monitoring of the skua population, and how do you monitor shags?
So the Antarctic shag is a different type of species again. So they have different types of foraging ecology. So they actually dive quite deep to catch their prey, which is a kind of demersal or benthic fish that are near the seafloor. And they breed on islands in kind of dense colonies as well. So colonies up to kind of 80 birds or 80 nests. So, I'm also tracking those. So looking at where they go during the summer and looking at their foraging ecology. So placing little GPS tags and seeing where they go. And we also record how many pairs are breeding and looking at breeding success throughout the year as well. When we catch an adult, we'll measure all the little biometrics such as bill length, head and bill, the weight, the wing, and then I'll be able to deploy little tracking devices. So I have the GPS logger that shows me where the birds go. I have this other device called the TDR, so time depth recorder, and that tells me how deep these birds are diving, which I got some data back recently, and it showed me that these birds were diving to 144 meters, or some of them were diving to 144 meters, which is incredible to think about, a bird diving that deep. I've actually also been deploying little video loggers onto the back of the bird, so that gives us another little insight to the habitat that these birds are foraging around, also looking at behaviours and kind of prey captures and what they're foraging on. So it's really interesting to kind of see what are these... what kind of habitat are these species dependent on, and if the habitat over the years is going to change, how will the species cope? So that's one of the kind of exciting things I'll be looking at.
Excellent, thank you. And is it quite interesting as a scientist to work with essentially construction partners? That's quite unique.
Yes, yeah, so through the Antarctic Infrastructure Modernization Programme, they have to do these environmental impact assessments prior to construction. And one of the main reasons why we monitor the shags and the skuas around Rothera is to look at the potential impact of having Rothera, the base station here, and how that might impact the skua population. So the fact that we still have 20 or 30 skuas breeding here and that they're still, you know, rearing chicks and things like that, it's a very good positive sign that, you know, we're not having too much of an impact on the population. But before we put up turbines, we want to know potentially what might the impact be. So I'll be recording kind of flight activity, flight heights of these birds, and I can put this into this collision risk model. And we can predict if we put up a turbine potentially at a certain height or at a certain location, you know, how many mortalities might that cause? And so that's just giving us, you know, information that we can feed straight into the management plans.
And to obtain this data for the collision risk model, you conduct vantage point surveys, and also you've been using a radar. Could you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so last year we used this marine radar, and essentially it's radar that we use on ships that kind of rotates every kind of 3 seconds, and if there's an object there, it will record its presence. But it's a really useful tool in kind of ornithological surveys. So it's used a lot in the Netherlands at these kind of offshore wind turbine sites. And if a bird is kind of flying through the area, this little radar will track its flight path. So that's what we wanted to use here at Rothera. So it was really useful to get a lot of data from that. The other method is the vantage point survey, which is a very common method used for wind turbine surveys. So essentially it's sitting in one location that is overlooking a vantage point. And yeah, basically you sit there for 3 or 6 hours and you record the kind of flight activity, so the flight paths over the area, flight heights, and different types of behaviors as well. So this all gives us builds a little picture of how these birds are using the area.
Amazing, Paul. I mean, I say for a PhD project, you've got so many elements to it, and it's really, really interesting. Have you got any concluding remarks about what Antarctica has given to you? Do you have a different perspective after being here?
So one of the things people ask me that question, and one of the answers I always give is coming to Rothera, it's really the people that you meet here, and everyone's within their roles. We only... Maybe in a typical season, we might have 80 people here working for Bass. You've got people here working as forecasters, predicting the weather. You've got people that work in the Met team. You've got mechanics who's keeping the generators going. We've got the SSAs and the GAs that help keep the base running.
I completely agree with you. And from my perspective of conducting science in Antarctica, I just appreciate how many people it takes to be able to work and operate here, and just the amount of support and logistics that are required to actually get our research to take off. And we're in such a fortunate position to be quite a small proportion of this pie chart of people that represent station, and to be the scientist but be supported by so many others. So
It really shows how important everyone's role is in a community. So it's really incredible.
Thank you very much for your time, Paul, and I wish you the best of success in all of your projects and interpreting massive amounts of data from the ecology of skuas and shags, and also I'm putting this all into a collision risk model to see how we can use green energy in Antarctica without having a detrimental impact on the wildlife.
You're welcome.
For such a seemingly empty and sparse landscape, it is amazing just how much work goes on in Antarctica. There's always so much to learn. Every day, there's something new to discover or experience. If you're the kind of person who thrives on that kind of adventure, you'll love it at the bottom of the world. I've said it before and I'll say it again, but do check out the job section of the British Antarctic Survey website, where loads of roles from working as a chef or support staff to flying planes are listed. And if you, yes you, have learned something new when listening today, tell everyone you know. Make sure to leave a review on the Ice World page or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up in our next bi-weekly Ice World episode release is a Christmas special, so be sure to tune in. Until next time, I'm Nadia Frontier, and thank you for listening.